Rocco Nucci with you until 6. Cavaliers basketball comes your way later tonight with a 7:30 pregame and an 8:10 tip time from the Windy City. Tim Alcorn and Jim Jones will have the call for you. And we are joined here in studio now by our good buddy, our good pal, Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle-Telegram. He joins us on our local beat brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Stop by and say hi to Jim and Bob and the entire gang at Vandermark Jewelers. They're on Broad Street here in Elyria, right across from the hospital. Vandermark Jewelers is a trusted name in jewelry, and if you stop by, you'll see why. Dave, this coronavirus is affecting all of us, my friend. It's really kind of taken on a life of its own here.
Absolutely has. And it's, the news is continuing to trickle out from a lot of the, from a lot of state colleges and universities. I know that Kent State, Ohio State, we were just talking in the break, University of Akron, Ohio, OU, all these places are considering, no in-person classes, moving a lot of stuff online. That's been the movement. And ever since I related, the first story that we were going to talk about today, we've had 3 confirmed cases of coronavirus and COVID-19 in Cuyahoga County. So that's it's starting to creep in.
It is. And boy, a lot has changed since you put this story together not quite a week ago, talking with Dave Coble, Lorain County Health Commissioner, and, diving into the coronavirus about 5 or 6 days back. One of the things that he mentioned in the story you wrote was prepare, but don't panic. I feel like we've kind of gotten a little bit closer to panicking over this. And look, I mean, it is kind of scary when there are 3 cases that are here in the greater Cleveland area. But it seems like if you take the proper precautions, the chances are, there's no guarantee, but the chances are things will be okay. What were your major takeaways in putting this together a week ago, and how have those takeaways maybe changed over the last 5 days?
And you said something right there, Bull, that's real important, is that the proper precautions, that does not include going out and buying up every N95 face mask you can find. It's really not going to help you out. Might actually bring the stocks to a point where the right people can't get their hands on them, and that would be first responders, many of whom have a stockpile of face masks just in case they're needed. There is kind of a national and down to the local government level stockpile of face masks, but it's probably not going to help you out. There was a lady at the gas station the other day in Elyria where I went in, and I thought her voice sounded kind of muffled when she was up at the counter, and she turned around and had a face mask on. And now some people choose to do this for real cultural reasons. I mean, there's in a lot of Asian countries, and I'm sure in some European countries as well, it's really rude to cough on other people. And would that it were that way here? I don't like it when people cough on me, or sneeze on other people. But overall, Dave Cavell and I have had the discussion before that the holy grail of public health is wash your hands. Wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. And you should be fine. If you don't have soap and water available, if you do have some of the dwindling stock of Purell,
yeah,
that people have, friends of mine have shared on social media, that they have walked into stores and this entire stock has been gone. Now, okay, maybe don't hoard it. But if you have some on hand at home, but then again, also just wash your hands with soap and water for 20 seconds, 25 seconds, you should be fine. And I noticed at the courthouse today when I was over there that a lot of people were doing that, and coming out drying their hands with towels. It's like, hey, fantastic. I'm so glad that people have remembered that is the one thing that will help you prevent that. And also, cough into your elbow, sneeze into your arm, don't sneeze on other people, don't cough on other people. Stay out of public places where, stay away from people who are immunocompromised, to, diabetics, the elderly, children. They're actually saying now that children seem to be less susceptible because they have very strong immune systems and they're constantly developing, but the elderly are much more susceptible because their immune systems are starting to slow down and they are sometimes, some of these nursing homes can be real places where you can actually get more sick. Hospitals are great for getting treated, but you can also pick up, some kind of nasty things there. And I know you guys are going to have more about the sports situation as it comes up, but, basically just take those real basic precautions. Don't cough on other people and wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands.
Yes, simply put, wash your hands is the easiest thing that you can do. And in many cases, seems like it's the most effective thing that you can do moving forward too. And, you know, to get back to Dave Colville's statement, you know, prepare, but don't panic.
Yeah.
You know, you want to at least put yourself in a position where you're able to handle this and put yourself in the best possible position to prevent this. But, you know, the don't panic thing is something that a lot of folks have harped on of late. It becomes tougher not to think of it that way when you have so many cases that are hitting closer to home now with the three confirmed cases in Cuyahoga County. And, you know, looking right now, 29 deaths, 900 plus confirmed coronavirus cases here in the United States. And, you know, to get back to how much you think has changed since the conversation you had with Dave, I mean, has a lot of it changed, or do you still think a lot of the same elements are at play?
Well, I think with any kind of disease like this, just from talking with the specialists, and I mean, really, just look to your doctor, look to your nurse practitioner, look to people with scientific, firsthand health care knowledge. I mean, you know, don't talk to Cousin Cletus on Facebook and listen to what he has to say. And when he tells you that, you know, the best thing to do is to drink a Corona. No. You know, this is a situation where you want to speak with healthcare professionals. If you have any concerns, you know, go to the CDC website, cdc.gov. Very easy thing to do. Go to Lorain County Public Health, Lorain Public Health. You know, I believe it's .com if I'm not mistaken, but that was another thing. You know, look to local, you know, healthcare providers. LorainCountyHealth.com. Hey, I was right. LorainCountyHealth.com has a great little fact sheet about all this kind of stuff, and just trust the experts on this one. You know, and if you're in a situation where you go in and it's a room full of 300 people and they're all coughing on each other, maybe just go sit at home and watch Netflix. You know, honestly, like if you're ever uncomfortable in a situation, get out of that situation. But don't panic. You know, that's a real important thing to remember. And just if you prepare yourself and you stay, you know, and you know, you stay in your comfort zone, you should be fine.
I thought it was at least mildly humorous that in your article you put in there the fact that Dave Colville did have to answer the question about Corona not having anything to do with the coronavirus.
And I think that the simple fact that he had to do that speaks to what he said were a number of phone calls, you know, people that they were getting from people. Should I, you know, because this virus, you know, originated in some way, and we're still kind of trying to figure out, you know, how it originated in China. But to put all the blame on China is, you know, is edging up on, you know, edging up on, if not overtly racist. I mean, that's pretty awful just to say that an entire country is responsible. You can't do that. And also don't put it on your local, you know, folks behind the counter at the Chinese restaurant. It's you can't get coronavirus by going to the Chinese restaurant unless somebody there has it and coughs on you, you know, and don't put any stock in any of that. Again, your cousin on Facebook is not the prime, you know, unless they are actually a CDC physician. Don't listen to them. Listen to the doctors. Listen to the CDC. Listen to the experts on this who are tackling it.
Listen to the experts, indeed. He's Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram joining us here on the Local Beat, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. And, well, you were all over a number of different topics this week. And, you know, I've read the most recent one today. What are Dennis Flores and Gerald Phillips up to? You know, they're alleging that something went down with that 2015 primary election.
Well, let's jump a little bit in the Wayback Machine, because I know I had to. Mr. Phillips, who is an attorney and accountant of some renown, and also running for county commissioner against Michelle Hung in the Republican primary on this coming Tuesday, a week from today. Wow, that was quick. He has filed a writ in the Ohio Supreme Court asking that the Ohio Supreme Court basically force Lorain County Prosecutor Dennis Will to investigate and possibly for criminal action, voters who were found to have voted wrongly or illegally, or, you know, in some suggestion, illegally, in Dennis Flores's ward race back in 2015. Flores had to go to court to get that overturned when he thought that there were some irregularities in the vote. Now that's kind of just a brief summary of what went down. But now Flores and Phillips, and interestingly timed, and I asked specifically, Jerry Phillips about that. Interesting timing, a week before the election, now they've decided to go to the courts to say, hey, this election happened now 5 years ago. Where are the criminal charges that we thought we were promised? County Prosecutor Dennis Will told me on the phone last night, look, we looked into that. And the Lorain Police Department took the lead on that. They investigated. They came back and they said, we found some minor, fourth degree misdemeanor charges that might be able to be filed for accepting, improper for a person, involved in the case, accepting improper, support on some of his housing, some of the housing that he owned. It's Tony Horn Sr. But we could not find any evidence that would rise to the level of felony voter fraud by any of the people who were named, in the lawsuit that eventually, won Flores the election. Mr. Flores, obviously no longer on council. But basically there was no evidence that could be brought to a grand jury to charge voter fraud. And also at this point, basically the statute of limitations on some of these things is long gone, long past. Mr. Will said that he and his staff were going to go over and see what they could find in Mr. Phillips' challenge to them in the state high court and go from there. The timing a week before the election and Mr. Flores has been a vocal supporter of J.D. Tomlinson, who is running in the Democratic primary for prosecutor against Dennis Will. Myself and my colleagues have called out, Mr. Flores and Mr. Phillips on that and asked them the question, why now? Why not in the 3+ years that you also said that the prosecutor's office took to not do anything and they actually did do something? Have you now decided that this is the time to bring this up? So we'll follow up on that. We'll see what Mr. Phillips does. He said if he was wrong, he was going to dismiss the complaint. We'll see what he does now. Ball's kind of in his court, and we'll see what the prosecutor's office comes back with. But it's one of those things that comes up. I've had this happen before in elections before that I've covered, and where something comes up at the last minute, and now it's out there in the public, and it just feeds the hyperbole of the season.
Hey. Timing is everything, I suppose, right? Timing is indeed everything. All right, well, before we get to our scanner stories this week, I do want to briefly revisit a story that I know we touched on last week. You've been covering this case. There were some opening statements that were made in the capital murder trial of Jacquez Ross. So what were some of your major takeaways from the opening statements that were made in that case?
Yeah, those statements, the opening statements started today after six days of jury selection. Opening statements were this morning. And basically, according to the Lorain County Prosecutor's Office, on the last day of January 2016, they alleged that Jacquez Ross shot and killed Michael and Fannie Lewis in the back of a rented SUV up on Fox Hill Lane. Police were pretty quickly on the scene after a neighbor called and called 911. And basically, they're alleging that this was all part of a coordinated conspiracy. It was basically a drug hit. Michael and Fannie Lewis, according to the prosecutor's office, were involved in trafficking drugs. And they had made some powerful enemies, and those enemies also believed that Michael Lewis was informing on other dealers to the police, and basically that was one of the reasons that he was targeted as part of a hit, and he and his wife were unfortunately shot and killed. I don't think that anybody deserves to be shot and killed. Even if you're committing a crime, there's certain times and we can have this argument all day long. But two people are dead and their families are mourning. And, that's basically what the prosecution has said. Now, the defense has said there's no evidence that Jacquez Ross did any of this. There's no gun. His cell phone was not found. A cell phone that was linked to him was not found, I should say. And there's not much DNA, and there are very few witnesses. And a lot of it is just kind of circumstantial evidence that leads the police and prosecutors to think that he did this. So he is facing the death penalty if he's convicted of aggravated murder. I will be in the trial for as long as it takes until we get a verdict and then beyond. So keep up with the Chronicle Telegram and ChronicleT.com for more on that.
And we'll certainly continue to discuss this as that progresses. All right, Dave, time for the fun part of the interview where we get to dig back through and take a look at some of your favorite scanner stories of the week.
I'll give you two, and let's consider this a mini sports edition of scanner stories because we have Dateline Independence, once again, disturbance at Top Golf. Aggressive male, no shirt, breaking windows, now running down Rockside Woods towards Rockside Road with a green hoodie on.
Hey, at least he found a shirt.
You know?
Right?
but to whom does it belong, I wonder? And then I'll give you Dateline Cleveland, sort of sports adjacent, fight on East 118th, female fighting with landlord over him turning off the electric. The landlord has a baseball bat, she has a stun gun. Hashtag epic battle.
Oh, boy. Wow. Well, I did not tune in long enough to see how that one ends, but I can only imagine. Jeez, oh man. Dave, a pleasure as always to have you here in studio. Never a dull moment when we do the local beat. Always on top of it. We appreciate the time. We look forward to doing this again next week.
Always a great time, Bull. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Dave. Again, that's Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram joining us on the local beat. Brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Stop by and see Jim and Bob and the entire gang down at Vandermark Jewelers. They are here in Elyria on Broad Street, right across from the hospital. It's a trusted name in jewelry, and if you stop by, you'll see why. That's Vandermark Jewelers. We have the University Hospitals, You and Your Health segment coming up next here on AM 930 WEOL at 100.3 FM.